flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast. Featuring
Wilmore's finest, Bronte Hill. The pride of the Excelsior, Joe Butcher Boy Shasky. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
What up, Grandpa Goo? Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. A Tuesday morning. We're going to get into Larry Bear in a 9 o'clock hour as well. We didn't revisit that as much yesterday, but he said a lot of stuff about the Giants. We'll get into some baseball. We've got the Warriors and the Utah Jazz later on today. The front end of a back-to-back as the Warriors are 22-23. And the trade deadline is February 6th, which everybody has circled on their calendar. Three more days in January. Then you get to the 6th of February. And what are the Warriors going to do? What are they going to do?
Trades are hard.
I don't think it's for a lack of trying, but trades are hard. No doubt about that. Mike Pereira, former vice president of officiating in the National Football League. He's going to join us at 8:30. The current rules analyst at Fox Sports, working next to Tom Brady and Kevin Burkhardt. That would be a lot of fun. We'll ask him about the Kansas City situation. Are they going to start to put chips in footballs? What do you do about that play? I want to ask about that entire sequence, and that'll be a lot of fun with Mike Pereira at 8:30. Baldy just joined us, and we haven't dove much into it, Shasky, as I say good morning to you and all the overnight dancers, firefighters, truck drivers, carpenters, high school kids, everybody, teachers, cops, you name it. But I'll let Pat McAfee and AJ Hawk on their show set the tone about Robert Sala, and I want to get your thoughts. Because I feel like you may be a little lukewarm about the addition of Robert Sala as he makes his return to the 49ers. Here's what McAfee and Hawk had to say about Sala being back with the Niners.
I assume first meetings you'll be like, boys, just like we used to do, same old we are going to get it. And congrats to Kyle Shanahan getting Sala back. Congrats to the Niners getting him back. Disappointing year for the Niners this year, AJ. Very disappointing.
I mean, super, like a weirdly disappointing season that I did not see coming, that is for sure. Like, I know they dealt with plenty of injuries and everything, but just shows you, I guess, how tough it is to consistently win football games in the NFL. And Shanahan, I mean, bringing Sala back, you're right, though. Like, and when you say, hope we can find his joy again, that's like a real, like, it's a real thing. Like, when these guys, it felt like the weight of the world was on him when he's coaching the Jets and everything that he has to deal with. Like, yeah, just get back to coaching ball and doing what you love, and we'll see if he gets in the head coaching cycle eventually.
Do you win because you're happy, or you're happy because you win, you know? I think it's the first one more so than anything. But, boy, if you lose, it's hard to be happy.
McAfee's kind of funny. He's kind of growing on me. I'm not going to lie. Kind of growing on me. I love the Saban and Belichick interviews. He's kind of growing on me. Why are you laughing, man? He's kind of growing on me. But Sala's back, Shasky. How you feeling when we all got the alerts Friday? Robert Sala's coming back after the Jaguars decided to hire Liam Cohen, the offense coordinator from Tampa Bay. They gave him the head coaching job, by the way. Duval needs to work. Sala's back.
I wasn't as enamored with Robert Sala as everybody else. I also acknowledge that, like, for sports talk radio, most people can't identify most coordinators in the league. Like, you referenced Liam Cohen. Liam Cohen could have walked into this room, shook everyone's hand, told us what his name was, and none of us would have any idea who he was. Let's be 100% candid. Very few of us have recognition on most of the coordinators. Yeah, the Spags and the Dick LeBeaus and stuff like, yeah. So Robert Sala being here and being a fiery guy on the sideline, that like resonate with people. I thought he was awful in 2018. No, I'm calling it what it is. I thought he was awful in 2018.
How was the talent though?
Bonte, I thought he was awful in 2018. Okay. Period. I didn't think that they blitzed ever. They were garbage. They got D Ford back being healthy. obviously drafted Nick Bosa, everything changed. They moved Arik Armstead a little inside, a little outside. It was a combination that year. Everything hit, and that defense just took off. Obviously, Dre Greenlaw, and who was the guy that got hurt prior to that who had signed as a free agent?
Michael Smith?
No, the other guy.
Who
played for New Orleans as well.
Oh, Quan Alexander.
Quan Alexander.
Yeah.
Quan Alexander was good, then he got hurt, and then Dre stepped up, and then Quan ended up returning, and Sherman had a great year. But I thought that they caught lightning in a bottle, and they were a very, very, very good personnel in terms of their front. And yes, it was an exciting defense. It was like a one-year thing, though. Now, the next year, Bosa goes down, and I thought they played admirable. But
defense played well that 2020 season during the pandemic.
I thought teams
played well.
I mean, there were certain games. I remember Ryan Fitzpatrick looking like Joe Montana against the 49ers in that one. So,
well, they had that number 47 playing corner. War of attrition. Seriously, you got to have. Listen, I think what you're explaining and what I think it's a very good litmus test to how we talk about Purdy. You need good personnel. You need the personnel. You need players. Good players. Talented players.
I don't think it has anything to do with Purdy.
But I'm saying, I'm saying Purdy, when people talk about the struggles.
Okay.
Well, look at the offensive line. Do you have any good players on the offensive line? What trick goes down? Well, you have Pudi. That's about it, right? And then you look at the wide receivers who can't get off of press man coverage. I mean, so at some point, other players got to make plays. So to this point that you're making about Robert Saleh saying that he was Luke Gorman 2020, that team dropped like flies. That team, how many different defensive personnel units did they have that
year? When you watched him, did you think, wow, next level DC?
I thought he was very good.
I thought he was solid.
He was very good.
Look, I don't think he's changing the fortunes of the 49ers from, oh my God, now all of a sudden they have a schematic advantage week in, week out, whatever. Is he better than Nick Sorensen? Yes, absolutely. Nick Sorensen is a special teams coach now and somewhere else. He's not even a hireable DC.
Right.
So is this an upgrade? Yes. I don't know how much. I really don't.
Sorensen, I think it's a tremendous upgrade over Nick Sorensen. Sorensen is who's the bread and breakfast guy? I call the players for the Raiders. Tom Walsh. I mean, we're talking about a low. Saleh's light years better than Nick Sorensen. Not even close. Not the same stratosphere. So let's not go crazy over that. Now, I want to go back to 2017 when the Niners lost 5 straight games by 3 points or less. And they had 2 players on that defense, in my opinion, DeForest Buckner and Arik Armstead. Now, Jimmy Ward started playing better that year. He didn't know about the other personnel. But I thought they played very today. I thought they were a hard-nosed football team that year defensively, considering the personnel that they had. I mean, think about it. They had Dante Johnson play a quarter starting 16 games. Dante Johnson, special team star.
Well, they were an expansion team.
They were an expansion team. And I thought they held up. I thought they held up very well. They had Eric Reed playing middle linebacker, Reuben Foster dropping every single game. So look, I hear you on Saleh. To say all that, I don't think Saleh's a bad hire. However, me personally, I want a weak Martindale or Lou Anarumo. Well, I want some exotic exotic blitzing. I want something different. The Y9. I don't want to stick to the Y9 because you running the Y9. You're so hell-bent on having the right defensive tackles, and they have to stay healthy. You have to have the DJ Joneses. You got to have the Buckners. You got to have the Armsteads. Right now, that's not on this football team. So you know baked into it, and everybody in the league knows Niners are drafting interior linemen on the defensive side of the football. Again, we're going down this road again. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of bothers me. I do want more speed in the secondary, and I think Saleh's a solid secondary coach. I see how the Jets members on the defense reacted to Saleh being fired, and they love that guy. They did. But I personally wanted, Spags blitzing on that third down. When's the last time you seen an exotic blitz like that for the 49ers? That wasn't so predictable. I want exotic blitzing. I want less predictability on the defense side of football. And I think bringing Saleh back, yeah, it's a good hire. It's obviously better than Sorensen, and there's no excuses on whether or not you have a familiar guy, Robert Saleh, for Kyle Shanahan. All right, Shanahan, you got your guy now. You got your guy on the defense side of football. But I wanted something unpredictable, and this is just too predictable to me. Now, they may ball out next year with the right personnel, and we'll be saying, boy, it was great to bring Robert Saleh back. Awesome. However, I wanted something different personally. I did. So I wasn't sure. Salah being back is great, but I wanted Wink Martindale or Lou Anarumo.
So you're kind of like me. Like, it's not that it's whatever. It's we're lukewarm on it.
I mean, it could work. You got to have the players, right? You got to have the right players
sure,
for your scheme.
But I would have said that, and you would have said right. that, no matter who no they matter picked what. As
but,
DC.
But just with Wink and company, it feels like they could plug and play. But guys, okay. just in Lou Anarumo, I didn't think, yeah, Cincinnati's defense kept them out of the playoffs. Look how many guys got hurt at that defense, and look how better that defense played down the stretch with a bunch of nobodies. But somebody had to be a scapegoat in Cincinnati, yeah. and it was him. But I look at Lou Anarumo, I'm saying, how's he faring against Patrick Mahomes? Cincinnati's given Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes a lot of issues on the defensive side of the football. So that's what I was looking at. I was like, man, Lou is a damn good defense coordinator in that division against Lamar and that conference against Josh Allen. They went to Buffalo a couple years ago in the snow and smacked Josh Allen around. They smacked him around with that defense. And Joe Burrow did his thing offensively. I think they scored like 10 points that game, Buffalo. So I wanted something different. That's kind of my reasoning. Although I'm not saying the Salah can't do the job, but who, anybody else lukewarm about the Salah rehire? Let's go to BPA. BPA, what's up, man?
What's going on, guys? Good morning.
Long time here.
I think given Kyle's sort of limitations the ability to evolve as a coach, maybe as a person, I think Saul is the best case scenario because he could have had Fangio 2 years ago, right? When Fangio went to the Dolphins and they sent him packing.
I know, I wanted
him.
They
didn't
him.
Want him.
I know.
And so you look at Fangio now, you have has completely turned around Philadelphia, which was one of the worst defenses in the league. They're now one of the best. But Kyle he's got four or five blind spots. They are unimpeachable. He is always going to run into them, and they're always going to kill him. Right, like his obsession with really a defense nobody else is really running. I don't know anyone else running a Seahawks cover 3 wide 9 defense
from 12 years ago.
Certainly, when you have no defensive tackles,
yes,
you have like 15 yards in the middle of the field that's just wide open to run in. And so, yeah, his blind spots they're predictable. He's always going to go down of his refusal to address the offensive line, his refusal to fire Jake Moody when everyone on earth knew that was the obvious decision. His blind spots are his blind spots, and there's a reason why he hasn't won a Super Bowl. You know.
Yeah.
Anyways, have a good day, guys.
You know. Yeah, he makes a lot of good points, and here on the 5-1-0, Shasky. Very lukewarm about the same defense. Again, no smart schemes, no disguise blitzes. You know, it's just that's for the 5-1-0.
Can I ask you this then?
Yeah.
Was he the best available candidate? Forget what Kyle wants to run. Forget all that. Like, I'll take a step back. Was he the number one defensive coordinator on the market, considering he was getting head coaching? Because I know they're different skill sets. Did you view him that way?
I view Lou Anarumo from Cincinnati as a guy. I don't know why I love Sweet Lou so much. And then BP actually was the guy who tipped me off the Wink Martindale. I said, hell yeah, I'll take Wink. Because I know what Wink has done in this league, helping the Ravens win a Super Bowl. The New York Giants, that New York Giants defense, which was terrible this year, Wink had them balling with the turnover takeaway differential. Wink had them boys flying around the football. Damn, look what we could do here. And it would be different, something new, something to where now teams are scheming up. Sean McVay knows what's happening with the 49ers defense. He's already got that built in right now. It's like, okay, this is how we attack. They've been doing the same damn thing for 7-8 years. Like, Andy Reid adjusted his defense. We can't even – who's the defense coordinator before Spags? We don't even know.
It wasn't Romeo Crennel.
No,
it was an older guy.
Yeah, I'm thinking someone old in my mind.
I'll pull it up in a second, but he
Who
went to
was it?
He went to old reliable Spags and said, "Dude, Spags, come run my defense." And the rest is history. The rest is history. Bob Sutton.
Yeah, I couldn't even put a face to that.
Bob Sutton was his defense coordinator, and they moved off him after 2018. They lost the championship game to the Patriots, and they brought in Spags, and the rest is history.
Oh, now I see the face. Yeah.
So.
Got a very particular jaw.
I don't know. 888-957-9570. Are you with us where you wanted to see something different? I just, again, I want exotic blitzing.
Well,
like, you see Spags on first down, second down, third down. He's blitzing corners. You hear a ball, he say the cat blitz with the corner blitz. I want safeties blitzing. I want all kind of different. I want chaos. I want eight guys at the line of scrimmage in the A gap, mugging the A gaps, mugging the B gaps, mugging the C gaps. I want guys bailing, blitzing. I don't want to. I want you just confused. This is NCAA football. I got six guys on the line of scrimmage. Who are you going to block with your five offensive linemen? Who's coming? Who's going? We're not going to get that with Robert Saleh. At least we don't know that. Maybe we do. Maybe we do. But I want it just, you don't know what the hell's coming. I got guys walking around like Troy Polamalu. Hey, am I coming or am I going? Am I playing the deep third? Am I going on the deep hash? What are we doing here? I wanted something a little different.
Let me play the other side of it, even though that I think we're in agreement on being lukewarm. Robert Saleh did, you know, go up to Green Bay this year and was part of their staff. I'm not sure his exact role, influence, etc. Green Bay did a lot of random stuff this year on defense. They hired a guy from the college ranks.
Boston College.
You know, anytime I've taken a big setback, I've learned from those lessons and I've tried to bake that into my next move. Maybe he learned some stuff. I mean, that's wishful thinking. I'm just throwing
it out. Maybe he did. And maybe we will see some more exotic stuff from the 49ers defense. By the way, it's time to give out the keyword. You need to know to win a spot in the knockout tournament. The keyword is blue. Not Golden State Warrior blue. Not sky blue. Not dark blue. Just blue. Again, the keyword is blue. And in case you have difficulty spelling, which is, you know, understandable, B-L-U-E, blue, like the color often seen on certain Warriors jerseys. Listen between 8:30 and 9, and when you hear this sounder, be the first to call in and give the keyword, and you will be on your way to Chase Center to play in a 95-7 game knockout tournament. Again, that keyword is blue, so you better be listening between 8:30 and 9. We'll go out the phone number, and you may shoot some hoops at Chase Center.
You're my boy, Blue.
Blue.
Blue's Clues. Did you guys grow up on Blue's Clues?
We just figured out Blue's Clues. Yeah. Steve. It's my man.
Was the heroin accusation?
That was all fake news.
Oh, it was all fake.
Okay. Somebody was on heroin?
Well, that was like a rumor about him being some sort of a drug addict.
That's why he stepped down. The fact that he stepped down is because he started balding and they didn't want a bald guy being on a children's show.
Total discrimination.
It is. That's totally what it is.
Would have been way more wild, though, if it was true.
You guys are all Blue's Clues fans?
We grew up with it.
Yeah, we were a little old, bro. Yeah. Just a little too old. Yeah.
You sound like you know about Blue's Clues.
Because my little brother, he's a lot younger. Blue's Clues and You.
Huh? There's a newer one that's Blue's Clues and You. I think his name is Steve, or not Steve, Joe, I think is the other name. Yeah. It's Filipino.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Let's go to Ryan at San Bernardino. San Bernardino, home of the San Bernardino Valley Wolverines. Ryan, what's up?
Hey, my dudes, how we doing?
Good.
Great.
Good morning.
Man, you guys are superstars. Hey, I called initially. I wanted to talk about the 49ers free agency, and then you guys started talking about Saleh, and I feel like I remember when Saleh first started, we kind of wanted him to be fired because he was new and a lot like the guy we just had, Sorensen, except Saleh corrected himself and he became an elite, I think, defensive coordinator by the time, you know, he went to the Jets. I obviously know the personnel was much better and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, that energy on the sidelines, it was oftentimes, I think, most Niner fans and Saleh jumping up and down, or that slot corner blitz coming off the edge. You know, he did do some creative things that he tied in with the personnel.
Yeah, he did have the nickel blitz. He had the nickel blitz, no doubt.
With the free agency, I think these are the Niners that go to the Super Bowl. These are the Niners that rebound. It's the Niners that their back is against the wall. They have to spend. Like, I think the thing that's going to help us the most is that we have $50 million in the bank waiting to sign Purdy. And you know how morass kind of structures these contracts? So his cap hit's going to be small next year, and I think we're going to be very aggressive in free agency. And last but not least, Andy Reid in Philadelphia, he had the same defensive coordinator forever. It was Jim Johnson before, rest in peace, he passed away. And I think it's a great benefit when you have a defensive coordinator that teams aren't trying to poach to be a head coach. And I think he has that again. So you have the best quarterback ever, arguably. You have defensive coordinators that were up in that echelon, the best ever, and they never leave. I mean, that's a huge advantage.
Huge.
Great call. Great call. You misspelled or mispronounced a million names. That's my kind of call. He said Sala. What did he say? Sela?
Sela. I've never heard that.
Nor have I.
Well, it's the other day that he botched. He just
Parag,
botched.
Yeah, what do you say? Marag?
Marag.
Is that what he said?
Marag, Marag.
Let's throw we defensive there.
How you do the
Jonathan Kamingo.
I don't know. You do the like drop when someone's trying to like, you know, show off a little. We need something for a mispronunciation. So whenever they mispronounce something, some sort of sound quietly in the background. I don't know what.
Just a little laugh.
I don't know.
Just a little laugh. Just a little laugh. I mean, Sailor.
Should be a Doobie Award.
Give him that last 2 months that Gunnar Henderson got.
Why
do
we got to go here?
Last year.
What I got to do with this?
Aldi Ruschman, who we're going to see in the home run derby.
What do I have to do with this? Paul Spadoni? What do I have to do with that?
Sometimes, in order to go forward, you got to go back.
No, you don't.
Was Robert Saleh the best available defensive coordinator?
Would you say he was better than Dennis Allen?
Wow.
Would you rather have Dennis Allen or a Matt Eberflus over Robert Saleh? Because those guys just got hired.
I do like Matt Eberflus.
I'll take Dennis Allen over Eberflus. Because I've seen Dennis Allen do it for quite some time. I like Allen.
I like Eberflus. I like Eberflus. Chicago's defense wasn't a problem. Then he got fired. And Chicago's defense just—I like Eberflus a lot.
So if they would have hired Eberflus, you'd have been happier than Saleh.
I would have saw the vision with Eberflus. Where's he at now? He hired in where?
Dallas.
Dallas. Yeah. Wow, he's
and him boy. And Nick Sorensen's the special teams coordinator.
Yeah, that's right. He is the special
revenge
teams coordinator.
Game. Nick Sorensen.
Okay.
I don't think Sorensen.
How
Cowboys
is he the special teams so. Coordinator? I just none of this makes sense. I don't get it.
The Niners were going to, like, he was a candidate.
Well, I do remember earlier this season, I said, boy, you better hope Sorensen's defense is solid. And Sorensen going, boy, you're out on Sorensen. I said, boy, the spotlight, the way we talked about Steve Wilks, Sorensen may have been in a no-win situation.
Wilks is unemployed.
Dude, but he made Steve Wilks.
It's another cycle.
I can honestly say I'm sort of built for this.
One's
stinkier.
Really? But no, Wilks had coached in the league for 19 years at least. Sorensen, they never get a job back.
Jimmy Ray was a coach for like 1,000 years.
Yeah, but Jimmy Ray
was terrible.
Jimmy Ray was terrible. He wasn't like Steve. Don't put Steve Wilks in that same category. He's much better than Jimmy Ray. Jimmy Ray? Oh, my God.
I can honestly say I'm sort of built for this.
He was built for it. He took the, trust me, he took the scapegoat. He's the scapegoat for everything, but can't blame him for everything anymore.
Who are you taking? Who are you taking, Niner fans? Jim Hostler's offense or Nick Sorensen's defense? Whose schematics do you want them?
Oh, who cares?
Don't have to deal with that anymore.
I honestly, now that I've thought about it, I probably would have went Robert Saleh as well over Dennis Allen and Eberflus, but only because I have familiarity with Saleh. Like, and I'm admitting that. Like, that's.
What about Rex Ryan? You want a Rex Ryan?
No, I'm cool off Rex Ryan.
Let's break. We'll get to Gene. Gene, hang tight. My Pereira's coming up on the other side. Don't forget about the keyword. Don't forget about the keyword. What's coming up in the game brought to you by Crystal Geyser, Alpine Spring Water. This is going to be cool. Mike Pereira. You always see him in the Fox booth next to Tom Brady and Kevin Burkhardt. He'll join us on the other side. The former vice president of officiating in the NFL, Mike Pereira, joins us on the River Islands guest line.
Morning Roast with Bonte and Shasky.
1 year ago today, Shasky, the Niners rallied from 17 points down at the half to beat the Lions in the NFC Championship game. How about that? What a time it was at Levi's Stadium. But a year later, it's the Eagles and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl for Super Bowl 59. And a guy who will be there in the booth next to Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady is Mike Pereira, current rules analyst at Fox Sports, kind enough to join us on the River Islands guest line. He's a former vice president of officiating in the NFL, and we got some things to get to. Mike, we appreciate the time today as he joins us on the River Islands guest line. All guests on any 570 game appear on the River Islands guest line. Is it a time for you to discover the islands, River Islands, and Lathrop? Let's get into it. Mike, Bonte Hill, Joe Shasky the Butcher, we appreciate the time as always. We know you're a busy, busy guy, so let's get into it. Obviously, a lot of controversy in the Buffalo-Kansas City game about the tush push. But I want to go to a play before that, Mike. Dunn Kincaid catches a pass at 3rd-and-3. He gets tackled. Maybe it's at the first down marker or whatnot. But in that situation, I wonder, because Buffalo rushed to the line of scrimmage to snap that fourth down play with 26 seconds left, how can you go about getting a measurement on the field today? Is it from up top where the booth says, you know what, it's short of the first down, continue to play on? Can Sean McDermott scream for a measurement? Because I thought Buffalo should have maybe relaxed a little bit before that fourth down play to be sure of themselves. So what is the criteria there for asking for a measurement?
Yeah, I mean, it's where have the measurements gone? You don't see them very much. I always love those old guys running out in the middle of the field, you know, and handing the rods to the official and put it down. Mm-hmm. I think that those are almost a thing of the past. I think it's going to be something with lasers coming up within a year or two where it'll be an automatic quick measurement. But nevertheless, in that situation, you know that it's in the hands of the officials inside of 2 minutes. You have to be very, very careful about stopping the clock and giving an advantage to one team or the other. And obviously, right, when you're at that point of the game, you know, it's critical. And so what happened in that situation is they reviewed the spot immediately. And you can do that because they have like 16 different camera shots that they can use, including in that game what's called a pylon camera. So they saw that when the ball hit the ground, it was short. It was indeed short. We're talking about the third down play.
Yeah, third down play. Now, remember, Mike, this was late. This was early fourth quarter. This was about 9:22, I want to say, in the fourth quarter when that happened.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's right. I'm sorry about that.
Remember the tush push with Josh Allen? Kincaid gets tackled on 3rd-and-3, and this wasn't under 2 minutes. So I was just wondering, can McDermott ask for a challenge? Because Buffalo's all scattered. And even if he doesn't ask for a challenge or be asked for a measurement, can he challenge that play? Because there was so much time left in the game with Buffalo up 22-21.
Yeah, certainly it has to be a challenge, and I confused it with another play, but it would be a challenge. He could actually challenge the call, or he could request a measurement. And, you know, as I said, where the measurement's gone, you know, if a coach tries to ask for a measurement and it's first down going to second going to third, he's not likely to get that granted. I mean, if it's third going to fourth or fourth down, then literally, if he is asking for a measurement, he should get it. And in this particular play, I don't know if he asked for it. And I know that the instant replay, the replay official, you know, it was too close for him to make a decision to either make it a first down or to leave it as a fourth down. And so he left it. But I do think that the ball touched the ground before it actually in possession of the runner, before it did get to the line to gain, although it is very close. And to me, it would have been appropriate to have a measurement in that situation.
You know, it's so interesting. You brought up lasers or whatever in the football. I know that there's a lot of people that want to chip and different things like that. Spotting of the football, it's one of those things that I've always thought is absurd. You know, it's a difficult task, right? You're on the sidelines looking through thousands of pounds of bodies. You got one guy on one side, one guy on the other. And now with television, and now that you're off the field and in the broadcast booth, it is crazy how many times the audience, and 99.9% of us are watching from our couch, is seeing how inexact the whole spotting of the ball is. Take me through these discussions for the league and for you as someone who talks about rules. Like, the spotting of the ball has been a big contention for fans forever, it feels like.
And it is an inexact science. You use the right word because you are looking through bodies. The problem, you know, there's problems with putting chips and balls in the first place. I mean, we tried it in the spring league with kickers, as a matter of fact. We put chips into the kicking balls, and the kickers went nuts. Now, kickers are nuts. So, you know, they felt like the ball was harder on the side where the chip was. They felt like it didn't rotate like it normally does. And I think you would have that same type of feedback from quarterbacks in the league if you tried to do something like that, to put a chip in the ball. But the other part to me, which is always why I was resistant to putting a chip in the ball, because what good does that do? Because even though you can maybe see where the ball is at its most forward point, how do you know when he's down? How do you know if the knee's down first? Is an elbow down first? Is a shin down first? And so unless you put, chips into body parts, I don't think you're going to be accurate in the first place. So there really is issues there, and I think it's going to remain an inexact science. Now, there are plays that happen outside the hash mark. You get a pretty clear look of everything. But in the tush push and the quarterback sneaks, I hate to say it, but it's a guessing game. And most all of the time, you can't tell from replay, from the shots that you get from the television network or from the boundary cams. You just can't tell because you can't see everything. It's like at the goal line. You see the plunges into the end zone, the tush push into the end zone, and there's no signal from the officials because they never see the ball. So they have to run in, unpile the pile, and then look and see where the ball is in the hands of the runner, and then they make their signal based on that. It is inexact, and I don't know how you can make it exact, period, without further complicating it.
I'm thinking, again, whether it's lasers, chips, whatever, you're syncing it up with video, and you're trying to be as precise as possible, but we all agree it's difficult. But I'm watching this game, and I keep coming back to the broadcast stuff because I've been going to games my whole life, and I'm sitting down. I had never heard of the official saying they could grant a touchdown because of behavior off the field, and like all of America, I was like, whoa, didn't know we could do that. And then there was like a blended clock, and I was unaware of that because sometimes the play clock isn't synced up with the game clock. Like, wow, there were so many things. Just as someone who's now, again, not on the field, you're in the television, you're broadcasting this, you're a consumer to a degree like us, you're also part of the media. Isn't this kind of a bad look for the officials, for America, as we're betting lots and lots of money on all this stuff? It just doesn't feel like it's all on the up and up. I don't know why.
To me, the bad look started in 1999 when we brought replay in. Mm. It put all the emphasis on the officials and slowed down everything. So they exposed their mistakes more than they've ever been exposed before. Now, they make mistakes. They make mistakes in every game. I mean, in our game, I mean, they missed a holding call on Barkley that should have been called. They had a touchdown by Washington, and they had two linemen 4 yards downfield in the end zone. You know, officiating's never going to be perfect. Everybody's got to realize that. I don't care how much we continue to expand instant replay. It's never going to be perfect. Just like players are never going to have a perfect game unless you don't play. and coaches are not going to coach a perfect game. It is a human game, but we don't want to accept that the fact that officials make mistakes, that standard is higher for them. And they accept that, and they understand that. But they also know that, you know, on field level with 22 guys running around, big, great speed, it's impossible to be perfect. But, you know, when it comes to some of the obscure rules, like I've been waiting 15 years on Fox now to say that that's a palpably unfair act. I was dying to say that, and I finally got my chance because I knew if I said palpably unfair act, everybody was going to say, what? It's like I'm waiting for somebody to stand under the goalpost and on a field goal attempt, jump up and bat it to keep it from going over the upright or the crossbar. I'm waiting to say, that's a foul for goaltending. I'm waiting for these opportunities. And finally, I got the palpably unfair act, which is really what it is. It's more designed for if a substitute comes off the field and tackles a runner that's headed down the sidelines, then that's palpably unfair for that to happen. And the referee can do whatever he thinks it's equitable. But this rule book is complicated, yeah. It's long, and there's a bunch of things in there that are reactions to one play that maybe happened in 1942. And then, lo and behold, something crops up that, you know, we have the palpably unfair situation in Philadelphia.
I bet you Bill Belichick may be the only guy in America who knew that, Philadelphia may be awarded a touchdown if the Commanders continue to do this, because he knew the rule book inside and out. Other than that, we were all lost, Mike, as we're talking to Mike Pereira here on the River Islands guest line on the Morning Roast, obviously in the Fox booth, current rules analyst at Fox Sports. We'll get to Brady in a second, because I know it must be cool to be in the same booth as him. But real quick, back to the tush push. How big of a talking point is that in league circles? And what do you do about this play? Because it feels like it's going nowhere. Instead, we're seeing teams evolve with it, playing tight ends at the quarterback spot to go in and get a quarterback sneak there to 3rd and 1. How difficult is this play to officiate? And what do you do about the tush push at all if you do something?
Well, I mean, certainly it's impossible to officiate. I mean, it's tough even on the lineups of the teams, offense and defense, because they crowd the neutral zone. And, you know, you don't call offside unless really the helmet gets, like, more than halfway beyond the neutral zone, into the neutral zone. And then the ball disappears. So it's really brutally difficult. What could they do? You know, I think it'll get discussed again. You know, is there injury data that says that the play is unsafe? If there is, then they could ban it. And the question becomes how. And so the answer is to go back to where it was illegal to push a teammate forward in the field of play for a score or to reach the line to gain. Similar to what you have on defense, on the defensive side of the ball, on kicking plays, the defensive team cannot push a teammate into the offensive formation. That's a foul for unsportsmanlike conduct. Mm-hmm. So they could go back and do that. That, to me, is the only way that you could get rid of the tush push. It used to be that way, but they banned that because sometimes in situations, who are you pushing? Are you pushing the runner, which was the foul, or are you pushing a teammate that's in contact with the runner?
Wow. Do you think that will move it forward, Mike? You think maybe that's back on the table with the running backs not being able to push their quarterback in on the tush push?
Yeah, that's certainly possible. But I think that, you know, we'll have to see, to me, whether the injury data, whether that's overtaken by the ugliness of the play. And certainly it got ugly down at the goal line in Philadelphia in that situation. But, you know, there was sentiment to change it last year, but there was not enough support, you know, to get the required number of votes to figure out even how to get rid of it, period. But I think it may get a little bit more support. But let's face this, too. It's been a pretty effective way to get a first down or to score a touchdown. And let's remember that this league is more concerned with offense than they are with defense. And so, you know, to me, that might be an element that sways them not changing it.
You eloquently bring me right to one of my favorite points. I just feel like defense, it's impossible to play. It's impossible to play in this day and age. I mean, these guys are engaging in routes, and they're making contact, and you touch a guy a little, and boom, it's a defensive hold or a grab or a PI. We want freedom of movement. I understand all that. I get really ticked off now with the sideline stuff. And you talked about, hey, they could pick up. This is a Saquon Barkley run off to the side where his foot is landing out of bounds and the DB is hitting him late and whatever. And I just feel like I've seen Patrick Mahomes do it to the Niners. I've seen other guys do it where they pretend like they're going to go out of bounds. The defenders ease up. That guy plants his foot in the ground a half a centimeter away from the out-of-bound line and then jumps back and cuts upfield and plows an unsuspecting defensive back. It's just really hard to play defense. And now, I understand, the guy's foot's fallen out of bounds. But why is the sideline such a safe space? We want guys to stay healthy. We want them to stay upright. We want to protect our quarterbacks. I think it's impossible to be a DB in this league nowadays near the sideline when guys are coming at you. And I had a real problem with that Saquon Barkley penalty.
Yeah, I mean, I understand 2 points there. I mean, the first point is it's impossible to play defense. I got in a little bit of a ruckus with Richard Sherman when the Niners played in the Super Bowl in Miami, I think it was. And I said something inappropriate on an interview about him. When I thought that he had said something inappropriate about the officials in a game that the Niners were in. And so we met face to face and we had a great conversation and settled the air. But the point was talking about to him about offense versus defense. He said, if my kid was going to play, what would be the first thing I would tell him? And Richard Sherman said, play offense. You know, that it's just too impossible. And then the second part on the hits out of bounds, at least the league did put in the fail-safe this last year to where if they call a late hit out of bounds and the foot is not down out of bounds, which happened in the Mahomes case a year ago or whatever it was, now the league can actually use replay to pick up that foul and to take it off. So it is a fail-safe for that reason, but it has to be clear that the foot is not down out of bounds. And also, if the foot touches out of bounds and then the runner continues to run upfield after a step that foot touching out of bounds, then that's not to be called. It's only when the player is headed out of bounds. It's tough, but player safety, we talk about offense, right? We talk about offense versus defense. The league likes offense. The same way with player safety. We have bent over backwards to protect players, whether it's quarterbacks, whether it's defenseless receivers, or whether it's players out of bounds. But that's just the way that the league has turned, in my mind, since 1994 when they put in further provisions to protect the quarterback. We've been headed in that direction for a long time and probably will. I mean, we're going to see pretty soon where it's just going to be illegal to block below the waist, period, mm-hmm. whether it's in the tackle box or outside the mm-hmm. tackle box. These days of trying to keep the skilled players into the game, everybody into the game, you know, I think that's going to continue on. And I'm not necessarily against that because you want your best players in the game. It makes for a better game. And you think about their life after football, which, you know, comes quickly. So that's just part of where we are right now, I think, in this game.
No, Don, I know you get sick of reading about the Chiefs conspiracy and how they get all these phone calls. I'm not going to waste your time asking you about that because teams got to control. I thought Buffalo had control of the football game, and they botched that, not Kansas City. Or the referees, I don't think, gave them aid at all. But lastly for you, Mike, because we do appreciate the time, man. Yeah, this has been fascinating stuff. What is it like working with the GOAT, Tom Brady? In that booth. And I thought Tom Brady has gotten better and better each week. I thought he was on fire when he opened that telecast on Sunday in Philadelphia, talk about what that game meant, getting to the Super Bowl, what it means for family, friends, organizationally. What has it been like working with Tom Brady this season, Mike?
I can honestly say I didn't really know what to expect. The only time I'd ever really met Tom Brady before that is in pregame in Foxborough when he was running around the stadium and he ran by me and said, hi, Mike. And I thought, holy mackerel, he actually knows who I am. and to be with him has been amazing. He's so buttoned up. He's so prepared. I mean, the copious notes that he pulls out before a game and puts in front of him so he can cover what he feels needs to be covered during a game. It's just incredible. And I have to say, I don't think I've ever met a kinder man. I mean, when you talk about a guy to me that is a football god who everyone knows, who everybody tries to get a piece of, when we leave the broadcast booth, there are people lined up just to see him. And when they see him and call his name and stick their arms out, he doesn't ignore them. He fist bumps them. He's such a good man, which I have to say, you know, brings up his Bay Area background, his strong parents, Sarah High School. I mean, all of this. He has been such a pleasure to be around, and I'm a fan. I no longer care about the league like I used to when I worked for him. I don't feel like I have to defend the league like I used to when I was the head of officiating. And I don't feel like I have to defend Tom. There's naysayers out there everywhere, but I've been around a lot of broadcast crews. There is not a single person that I have seen that prepares more than Tom. There's not a single person that takes it more seriously than Tom takes it. And he was thrown into it without any experience at all. I think about Troy Aikman, who I worked with Troy, who I love Troy, and I think he does a phenomenal job. Yeah. He worked games in NFL Europe before he actually worked in the NFL for Fox. He worked as part of a three-man booth before he set out on his own. And Tom got thrown into the fire without any of that experience. And I have learned to love the man just because, to me, he's so buttoned up and he's so kind and he's so generous with his time with the people that he works with, that I think I will actually look back and think of him as a GOAT, as the GOAT in my broadcast career in terms of people that I have that I've worked with.
Wow. Wow. That was a strong compliment there. And you mentioned non-experience and also replacing Greg Olson, who I think does a phenomenal job in the booth as well.
I will say this. The difference between Tom and Greg Olson was far more time in the bars after the game with Greg Olson than with Tom Brady. I'm more rested after being with Tom than I was with Greg.
He's a meticulous dresser, too. Right. I've noticed that when they do the zoom outs. I'm talking about Tom. I mean, he's just always buttoned up to a T.
He certainly is. He always looks good. And, you know, he's so damn tall. I mean, when I first met him, I mean, my neck was crooked because I was looking up the whole time. And he's fascinating to watch. And like I said, my hairstyle has changed a little bit. Oh, did you get a new hairstylist? Yeah, Tom's. Alex is on the road with him, and so she kind of fixes us all up a little bit before we go on air.
Oh, that's awesome,
Mike. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, this was awesome.
You get a lot of flack because obviously all the officials always do, and we appreciate you coming on here. We love hearing, you know, right from the source of someone who's knee deep in it and has been for his whole career. So thank you for coming on the Bay Area airwaves with us.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Good anytime. Stuff. Mike Pereira, River Islands Guest Line, former vice president of officiating in the National Football League, head of officials, not a current rules analyst at Fox Sports. Very enlightening stuff there. And we're going to get into it after we throw the number out. 415-523-4652. Be the first one with the keyword to call in. That's 415-523-4652 with the keyword that will win a spot in our knockout contest at Chase Center on Monday, March 3rd. You must be 18. You must be a California resident. And the next time to win is at noon on Steiny and Guru. And we'll be doing it all week, so keep listening for your chance. Again, 415-523-4652. Be the first to call in with the keyword. And you, my friend, may be shooting some basketball at Chase Center, March 3rd.
When you are an official on every call, I don't care if it's youth, high school, college, professional, on every call, half the place hates you. Every call, okay? So I understand, baked into the job, you're going to be unliked. Like, it's the most thankless job ever. I freely admit that.
I would never. You know, I was covered
I've
a Pac-12.
A ton of games.
Yeah, I was covered.
Six the other day.
Covered Pac-12, yeah, God bless your soul. I was covered a Pac-12 tournament back in 2013. Yeah, no flexing. Vegas, MGM Grand, and Arizona's playing UCLA. Arizona's got Aaron Gordon, Nick Johnson, Kyle Anderson, Jordan Adams, Zach Levine's on UCLA. And I watch these referees walk in the tunnel, and the Arizona fans is hanging over the tunnel. Double birds, calling them every name in the book, and these officials just got to walk through the tunnel head down while getting berated with all kind of slurs. I mean, it was unreal.
At that point,
and at that time I said, I would never do that job.
Well, look, that's tough, and I'm not saying it's not a tough thing, but at that point it does become a little like white noise.
Yeah.
When you're in an empty gym with a bunch of third graders and parents are berating you, and you can literally turn and look and stare them in the face, that's just as demoralizing to me, if not
probably,
more.
Probably.
Like, it, I mean, 19,000
people, like 12,000 people screaming at you, 50 people screaming at you. The fact is that you're going to get screamed at as an official.
But that being said, the one thing that I think that the NFL should really look into, and I mean this with all my core, they've got to get, and I specifically want former defensive backs and wide receivers as officials, because I think that when I think about the sidelines and all the contact that's going on with these guys, there's the letter of the law and then there's the spirit of the rule. And I think too many times we see the letter of the law affecting a play that has no business affecting the play. There's not one person in the planet who thinks 3rd and 20, 5-yard hold should be an automatic first down.
Nor do I think pass interference should be a spot foul. I think they need to go to the college rule where it's 15 yards unless it's the obvious, egregious pass interference that enables a team or limits a team from getting a touchdown.
I'm open to that.
Like, I'm open to that. Because sometimes you see some ticky-tack pass interferences. Like, wow, that's a 50-yard penalty? Come on, man. You're flipping the game.
On something that's very bang-bang. And, right. I keep coming back to the sidelines because I'm saying, like, look, man, I get you want player safety. Dude, I get it. Nobody wants to see who's the backup for Mahomes right now. Yeah. Is it Carson Wentz?
Carson Wentz.
No one wants to see Carson Wentz versus Kenny Pickett. Ooh, we want to see Jalen Hurts versus Mahomes.
Carson Wentz revenge game? Carson Wentz
revenge game? Oh, that would actually be quite the storyline, right?
Oh. Carson Wentz.
Okay.
I'm actually buzzing on that now.
NFL Red Zone fan wants to see that. But point being is nobody wants it.
Hey, no.